closer.
Buddy, I'm your host, Todd Conklin, and this is the Pre-Accident Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. It is always fun to hang out with you. And thanks for subscribing and downloading. This has been a really interesting little ride. I am a little bit shocked by the amount of people that are listening to this podcast. Thank you. We've turned into kind of a big community. We're having about 500 downloads a day, which is, 500 more downloads a day than I thought we'd have. So let's just start there and kind of work backwards. You want to? This podcast today is going to be a good one. I am exhausted. Tired is not even the word for it, but glad that spring is here. Always a happy time. And I really have been trying to be, I'm practicing being grateful. I don't know if you've thought about this very much, but I think we're generally kind of crappy at being grateful. So that's been my I always have these quests, and that's my quest now. I'm learning to say thank you and be appreciative and be grateful and sort of focus that and live as much as I can in the moment and see how that does. And it seems to do pretty well. It certainly makes traveling easier. It makes work a little easier. People are much, much more pleasant to hang out around and be with, et cetera, et cetera. So all in all, it's a great little experiment. So let's talk about today, because today's podcast is going to be very interesting to you. This is Bob Edwards, and actually this podcast turned into two, so there's a continuation of this one, and here's how it's going to split up. His first podcast, Bob's going to talk about his life and work as a practitioner of the new view, Safety 2, sort of human performance. He's going to call it HOP because he comes out of the GE school. And he's going to give us some background and information on how he sees HOP. You're going to love what Bob has to say. The second podcast, which we'll talk more about the next time we meet, is specifically on organizational and operational learning. And that is truly what Bob is an expert in doing. And he'll talk a little bit about that expertise as we progress through this podcast. Here's what Bob brings to the table. Strong engineering background, very, very helpful, with an amazing fluency in human performance. You'll see that almost immediately. But what I think you'll take out of this is a real appreciation for organizational safety and an appreciation for how a person from the operations side of the house can really speak with an authority about how this safety works and about what workers do that maybe the theoretic side of the house wouldn't have. I think you'll really dig where Bob is coming from. And I know one thing for sure, you're going to learn from today's podcast. That's always the goal. These conversations are just an opportunity for you to hear how other people are thinking and what's important to them and where things go. And so sit back and enjoy. I think you'll find this podcast to be a very enlightening way to spend 27 minutes. And that is always the goal. So have fun. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob Edwards, the HOP coach. More on that as it progresses. So the good news is we get a chance to do this entirely again because humans are fallible. Even the best make mistakes. And if you're going to erase one, you might as well erase one. I mean, you know.
It's a good test to see if we can actually do this twice, right?
So Bob Edwards, the HOP coach. That's your nom de plume, yeah?
Yes.
Your nom de safety differently is the HOP coach.
Right.
Tell us about yourself. Why do people need to know you? And I think they really ought to know you.
Well, my background is I started in the Army. I was in the military for a few years. And then I went to college and became an engineer. So I've been in general industry since 1989. And I've done a lot of different things. I was a design engineer for about a decade. Maintenance leader, technical support leader. But I've been in safety for, 8 years now. And so I've been working for the past 16 years for a fairly big company. You may have heard of them. It's General Electric. I don't know if you Ever heard of
them? Not familiar with them at all. Yeah,
they're pretty big.
What do they make? Electric things?
They make a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Okay. And so I was in their appliances division. Actually worked at a really amazing site called Roper Corporation in Lafayette, Georgia, making GE cooking appliances. So I just actually recently stepped out on my own to do more of this human performance coaching with more businesses. But I still do a lot of work with GE.
And Roper's really interesting because it is kind of known as GE's highest performing, highest productivity.
They're really good. Yeah,
one of their best. That's a saying something in GE.
Yeah, they make a really good product, cooking appliances, and they're a great place to work. And like I said, I've been there about 16 years. So about 3 years ago, I had been in safety for a while, and I like it. I mean, I really, really enjoy everything that I've done. But we were at a safety presentation that we do, where all the managers, plant managers, and safety guys were presenting how their year has gone around the topic of safety. And someone that's now become a very dear friend, Lisa Brooks, was there. And she was listening to our story at Roper and what we do there and could sense that we were maybe a little frustrated. We wanted to do something different. And she said, have you ever heard of Todd Conklin or of human and organizational performance? Well, we had not. But she told us just sort of the 5-minute elevator speech on it. And we're like, this sounds interesting to us. And so I think within a couple of months, they had you there. It was 3 years ago. They had you there to actually train us and teach us the fundamentals of human and organizational performance. I guess a lot of companies call it HP. We call it HOP.
Right, or the New View, or New View, yeah. Safety differently.
Yeah, safety, I mean,
lots of names for it.
Yep. And so during this process, you introduced us to this notion of learning, operationally learning, learning teams. And so we started at our site really getting more interested in understanding more about the complexity of failure and how important it is to bring people together that are close to the event in a more meaningful way when you're trying to make things better.
So when you were first introduced to this, what'd you think? I mean, first of all, did you buy it right off the bat?
Oh, yeah. So right off the bat, I was 100% on board.
Yep. Liar. So liars. Liar. He's a liar.
So here's where I was at. I was that firm, fair, and consistent, kind of guy that if it seemed like a violation to me, it was a violation, and that was kind of where I was at. Matter of fact, I hate to admit this, but a lot of times when I walk out into operations as a safety guy, they'd kind of get on the radio and go, oh, Fox in the in-house, here comes that safety guy, right? And so when I was first introduced to this, I was concerned that it was not work, right? That it wasn't the right way to look at stuff. And so we actually had an event. You remember we had an event as a near miss.
But then hold on, you were a hardcore enforcement guy?
Yeah, yeah. Firm, fair, and consistent. That was me.
Did it work for you?
Well, it seemed to work okay, except the reality was that I was not really learning how things, I didn't really know all that was going on. I wasn't learning. I was just trying to enforce compliance. And I'm now at a point where I'm like, okay, compliance is important, but it doesn't necessarily even mean that you're safe. But all this has been a journey for me, right?
Right, for sure.
So it didn't happen overnight. And as a matter of fact, where I started to shift my thinking around this was when you were there training us. I liked the philosophy and everything, but I was concerned because I was that guy that was out there looking to catch people doing stuff wrong. But I did it with passion. I mean, I meant well. I thought I was doing the right thing.
But I think that's pretty important to talk about because, I mean, your intent was exactly that, to make the world a better place,
right?
And to be firm, fair,
right,
and consistent.
Right.
I mean, those are good things, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of.
Yeah. But I can also tell you that I'd reached a point where I didn't like walking up on people doing work because they were nervous about me even being there because I'm the safety guy, right?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, so
nothing good
like
about that.
And so then when we were introduced to this new way of thinking about this, it started to click a little bit, and then we had an event happen. While you were there training us, we had a near miss that involved a fork truck driver loading a trailer who had loaded the trailer completely, and in order to put the last six product on, last row, if you will, he has to take the dock plate down And then set, so he doesn't drive onto the truck, but he drives up to it and sets that last six on so they have a full trailer. Otherwise, the dock plate gets hung up underneath the product sometimes, and it's a mess. So that's our procedure, and that's how he normally does it. And it actually works fine normally. But on this particular day, I think it was maybe in week two that you did like a two-week session there with us. Bunch of training.
Right, yeah. Right.
He
because there's no place more fun than Lafayette, Georgia on a weekend.
That's exactly right.
Good God.
In the middle of nowhere.
You guys had a – I didn't even think you had a Subway then. That was a new thing.
We had a Subway. Yeah, it was only open 3 days a week, but no. So what happened is there was some kind of a quality hold or miscan or something, and they asked the driver to come back and pull the stuff back off the trailer. So he comes back over and picks up that first six and goes and sets them down, and then he forgets to put his dock plate back in place. So then he tries to drive onto the truck to pick up the next six, and he gets stuck in that gap. Now, the dock lock is still in place, so the trailer didn't go anywhere, but the dock plate was not in place. So firm, fair, and consistent, remember, here I am. So we have this rule that you never go onto a trailer without the dock plate in place, the dock lock in place, the light on the inside green. You know, they have this condition.
Right, right.
So in my mind, he had violated our rule.
But weren't the lights really screwy? Wasn't it the thing, if I remember this one right, it was if the dock plate was up, the light was red. Mm-hmm. If the dock plate was up and the IATC bar was hooked, the light was...
I can tell you how it was. If both of them were in place, the dock lock and dock plate, it was red. If you take the dock plate down, it would go to no light. And then I'm sorry, I'm backwards. If both of them were in place, the light on the inside is green, meaning you could go in and out of the truck.
Free to go.
Right. If you take the dock plate down, the light would go from green to nothing until you took the dock lock loose, and then it would go to red. So the interlock with the inner connection of the lighting was such that there would be a moment there where it would be no light. So I said to you, even when this happened, well, the fact that there was no light, he should have treated it like it was a red light, which you said, I don't think no light is the same thing as a red light.
Right, because no light strikes me as no light.
Right, right.
Whereas a red light seems like a red light, and a green light, well, everyone knows that's a green light.
So when this event happened, nobody got hurt. It was a near miss. But in my mind, he had violated our rule. And so we sent him home for 3 days and took his performance award away and, you know, docked his pay and all that. And so we came and told you about the event. And I remember the conversation because you looked at me and you said, Bob, I think you guys just punished somebody for a human error event. I said, yeah, but Todd, we have to have that rule because it's dangerous to drive on a truck without everything being in place. Your response to me was, oh, no, I get it. You need the rule. The rule's important, but you're punishing someone for human error. That's not going to make the system better. I bet you have some system weaknesses here. So asked me, you said, are you willing to learn?
Right. Yeah, okay. Okay. So far, so good.
I mean, it would be really rude of me to say, no, Todd, I'm not willing to learn. Right? And so you said, let's do this thing called a learning team. Let's bring together the guys that know a lot about this and let's find out really how complex the work is. So we had to bring him back in off of his 3 days off. And because we need him there, you told us that right off the bat. You got to have the guy that was close to it. That actually did it.
Well, you have to include the worker, right? Yep. Doesn't it amaze you that so many companies do investigations, they do learnings, they do event understandings, and they don't ask the people who had the problem? It stuns me. Well, but
we see it everywhere. It's not. I mean, all of lots and lots of places. That's the problem. Or maybe we go in, we get their statement. And then we go do our investigation. Yeah, we're completely different now. I mean, the most important person to me is the guy close to the event, the guy that was there when it happened, or maybe even triggered it happening because he knows more than anybody about it. So anyway, we had this first learning team. It was a couple of the drivers, the area supervisor, and then this driver that actually did it, and you and me. And I think Lisa Brooks may have been there too. She was there at that time. And when this driver walked into the room, he looked at us and said, hey, guys, I promise you this. I'll never do that again. I remember your response. He said, you know, I appreciate your sincerity, but I don't know that you can promise me that because I don't think you intended to do that.
Yeah.
So to set the tone that this is not about blame. We're not looking for you to always remember, never forget. We want you to tell us about your work. And then he explained this complexity of what he does every day. Now, in my mind, I've been there 16 years. I think I know a lot. Maintenance leader, technical support leader, design engineer, safety guy, right? I'm thinking he goes out there, loads trucks every day, He does the dock plate, the dock lock, and he knows what to do, and he failed to do what he knows what to do. When he explained the complexity of his work, we realized, wow, this is actually kind of an error trap, if you will. You know, this could easily happen again. Expecting him to always remember doesn't make that system any better. And so this was our exposure, right? This was to this operational learning instead of more of an investigation approach. It was more of a, hey, let's learn how this really happened. And so then when we realized that we had punished somebody for human error, my plant manager and you and I, we talked about this, right? The ETS manager there, we said, you know, normally we might just say, okay, we were wrong here. So from this day forward, we'll treat this thing different. Scott Osborne, the plant manager, he said, no, this is a good time to start changing right now. So, I mean, it's amazing, right? He was willing to undo something that we had just done. So he said, let's tell this story of how we thought this was violation, but in fact it was error, how we did this learning team and we learned about the complexity of the work, and let's undo what we did to this guy. We gave him his money back. We took it off his...
God, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah, we took it off of his record.
Did the earth collapse and a gap
the
in the solar
began
system?
To sing. Yeah, that's right.
Imagine, this is a plant manager walking discipline back. God, imagine the maturity and the guts and and they can do it. They totally can do it. You can always walk punishment back, but to have somebody actually do it is remarkable.
Right. And that was really the beginning 3 years ago. That was 3.5 now. That was the beginning of our HOP, our human performance journey, and this whole desire that we've built into our site now to operationally learn and make and respond instead of react when things happen.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. So what was it about human performance, about the new view, Safety 2? What was it that attracted you?
So several things. The more I realized that there's value in learning, there's a ton of value in learning, that people fundamentally come to work to do work and do a good job, that the system needs to probably be improved, and the best way to improve the system is to include the workers. So it's better collaboration. The solution sets that we're seeing from this better collaboration, by not being so focused on blame, but way more interested in, and really not even being that surprised by error. I mean, we've changed a lot of our thinking around error at the sites that I work with and that I've been involved with. We used to be sort of surprised by it. Now we're like, well, this is actually kind of normal. Errors just happens, right? Because we're humans.
Oh, yeah.
And then bringing those guys close to the event into a really meaningful conversation and saying, hey, guys, we need you.
But what was it about operational learning, the learning part of human performance or the new view, the learning part of the new view that became so attractive to you? Because, I mean, I don't know if you know this, because probably no one tells you this, but I, without a doubt, on the safety side, I don't know if there's anybody better in the world right now as it relates to deep dive understanding of safety learning, of operational learning. I mean, you've taken it to a level that's remarkable. Why? I mean, what did you see there that others didn't see? What did you see there that that Decker didn't see? Or what did you see that Tony Machar didn't see? I mean, I hate to do that, but...
They know way more than I do. I just... What happened for me is just this notion of, okay, it's not a simple failure like I thought it was. And so I've been learning from all you guys, Decker and you and all. I mean, I've been reading your work and studying this stuff. But then when I go out, I'm a practitioner, right? So I go out and actually do this stuff. And when I bring these guys into this conversation and I realize, wow, what I thought was sort of a linear path to failure or sort of five whys kind of look at stuff,
right,
you know, where this cause and effect thing happened, really maybe isn't anywhere close to that.
Why'd you screw up?
Instead of that, it's much more about all of the complexity of the work. It's actually kind of messy, but it's really interesting. And I like to learn. So when I realized that I should be learning a whole lot more instead of making decisions and fixing stuff, I need to be more interested in learning. And the best way to learn is the guys that are close to the event. They're going to know stuff that I'll never know unless I ask them.
In your mind, and you use these words a lot, is there a difference between the word learning and the word discovery?
Yeah, I think there is. There is for me. So in order for me to learn, I I sort of need someone to teach me or show me, or I mean, that's in my mind, that's kind of learning. So I learn from the guys that are close to the work. When we do this event learning stuff, they're teaching me as a coach. So I'm there learning from them. And then as a group, we really discover how this happened. And it's actually kind of exciting and fun when you look at, we call it the wall of discovery. As we take flip charts and write down all the stuff that we're learning, a couple of things happen. I'm just really asking questions and learning. That's my goal as a coach. I'm not fixing. I'm not allowing them to fix initially. We just want to learn. But then as the team, they even learn from each other. So sometimes they think they all know what each other does. But in reality, there's peer-to-peer learning that happens when we do this. And then this notion of discovery is, here we have this wall covered with this flip charts with learning and all the things that came together. And we start to see in the discovery mode how things coupled and came together. And I hate to use a term, but sort of sometimes a perfect storm of things came together. A lot of them aren't even normal hazards and risks as we would see them in our JSAs and our hazard assessments.
Oh, almost always, right? Yeah. Because if we had identified it in the JSA, we probably would have programmed the system, changed the organization, mitigated the hazard. Right. I mean, the things that hurt people are almost never the hazards we identify.
That's a little scary because we do all this hazard assessment, right? And, and we need to do them. I'm not against them. I think we should continue to do hazard assessments and JSAs and all that kind of stuff. They help. But the more I do this, the more I realize that's actually only a piece of what causes bad things to happen is hazards and risks. A lot of it is just kind of normal stuff that's going on out there every day.
Well, you know, Decker talks about the difference between restorative and retribution, restoration and retribution. So restorative justice versus retributive justice. In fact, the podcast, A Couple Before You, he talked a lot about that when he talks about just culture. In a way, Bob, what you're doing with your operational learning emphasis is the restorative side of that. I mean, so when Decker talks about restorative justice, and the example he uses is South Africa after apartheid, right, or Martin Luther King, those are incredible examples of restorative justice, but also so's Bob Edwards and a learning team on a hand cut. It really is a way to move away from retribution, assuming that somebody screwed up, and then therefore taking that to account into understanding the context of how that happens. So it's a remarkable difference. I mean, that's hugely different. So what led you there?
Well, I mean, I can tell you where I was before was, I think, very investigative. You know, I would go and interview the people that were involved a lot of times individually and then get their stories and look for the one real, what's the real true story in the middle of all this. I can tell you this, I don't think I do investigations anymore.
Well, do you believe there's a truth?
I'm
not talking about it in the whole world. We can have that. Yeah, that's a different podcast. That's a different podcast. But is there one truth to an event?
I don't know that I'm really even concerned about that. I think it's just tell me what you're willing to tell me. And what did you see and what made sense to you? And then so really I'm just looking for the story as each person saw it and teach me from that. And I'll listen and learn. I'm not so focused on what is the story. I'm really not focused on what is the root cause. Just tell me about the conditions that were all going on that led to this.
So you're a hardcore safety one guy, enforcer of compliance rules.
Mm-hmm. Boxing the in-house.
Fox, check it out. Fox, safety on the floor. And now you've turned into this really soft and fluffy safety tube bunny kind of, right? I mean, that's remarkable. Is it better?
Well, it's way better. Yeah.
Why is it better? Because that's the question.
When you move away from this investigative mindset to more of a learning mindset, I no longer am focused on who screwed up. I'm way more interested in how complex is the work and how much adaptation, how much operator struggle. You know, that's to me a great way of looking at this. Not operator behavior, it's operator struggle. I mean, what are you having to deal with? Matter of fact, if I find someone that hasn't followed a procedure, my question now to them is that procedure even followable as written?
And what do they say?
Yeah. You want to know the truth? Not really, right? So when they realize you're not looking to blame them, you're really looking for their collaboration with them to make a better plan.
Right.
People will come forward and help you make work better.
How important is the fundamentals of human performance or the fundamentals of the new view a hop, you call it. How important is the hop fundamentals to getting an organization to move to this level?
I mean, I think it's critical, and I think you have to start with senior leaders and the lead, you know, the leadership team, because we've kind of trained ourselves as leaders to make a decision. Don't come to me with a problem without a solution. That whole mindset, and it's, you know, I'm paid as a manager to make a decision because I know what to do. It's kind of Taylorism, right? It's the planner smarter than the worker
thing. Right, right.
And so we're undoing that and kind of breaking that notion that the planner is always smarter.
How do you get managers to be braver? Or because it's really, is the word braver? The word's probably courageous, actually. How do you get managers to be more courageous? But really what I guess I'm saying is, how do you get them? Because it feels like they're giving up control, mm-hmm. when in fact, I would tell you, quite the opposite is happening. It feels like they're giving up control, but what they're gaining is a tremendous amount of knowledge.
Right.
And knowledge is way more important than control. Well, how do you get them to be braver? So what are you doing when you go to a company? How do you get the management team to buy into this idea? And then how do you get them to cede control to allow workers to problem identify, discover, and then problem solve, and then bring back to them problems and answers?
So, I mean, it's a really good question.
Thanks. Thanks. I'm filled with a million good questions. I have no answers, but a million good questions.
So even in the fundamentals training, when we teach, take the leadership, I don't want to say teach, it's more of a conversation and a journey, right? We carry them on this conversation about sort of where are we at and where do we want to go moving forward. We've even built into the training a lot of examples of where we've done this. And when they see it, they're like intrigued. Okay, so it looks like you came up with better understanding, which led you to a better solution set. And you definitely did it because the employees did it for you. I mean, they were there. They can see these examples. And then fairly quickly at a site that's wanting to do this, we go do operational learning. Pick an event. I don't even care what it is, right? And maybe we ought to even do a podcast sometime about the details of how you do a learning team.
Let's do that next. That'll be the deal. Okay, so we'll make this a double. Okay. And we'll do this discussion on how sort of your journey and who you are, because I really want people to know you. Actually, what I really think people ought to do is call you. That's what I really think. And then the next one, we'll talk about how to actually learn. That's a good idea.
I wanted to say this, too, about accountability, because sometimes I get this question from managers. I need accountability. Well, one thing that we have some great examples now as we move forward in this, there's a big difference between rearward accountability of, hey, I found somebody that didn't follow procedure, versus sort of this forward accountability of, they helped me solve it, they own it, they're going to keep doing it because it's their idea. And when things need tweaking and adjusting, they're there, the guys that help solve it, the workers that are close to it. It's a way stronger defense, if you will, to have forward accountability than it is to always be looking for who didn't follow
the How's the regulator feel about this? How's VPP or OSHA or those kind of guys? What do they say?
My site is a VPP star site. They loved it. Our last recertification, because it had been 5 years since our previous certification, so we've gone on this hop journey over the past 3.5 years. So just recently we did our VPP recertification, and we had these literally storyboard after storyboard of these learning teams and this operational learning and this new view, building it into our culture. And actually, it kind of is an operational thing more than it is a safety thing. It applies to quality and operational upsets, sets and stuff. We start the conversation with safety, but VPP loved it. And we're excited to see the employee engagement at an even better level than we were able to achieve with our previous approach.
Amazing. Amazing. Did you guys get safer?
So, I mean, yes. Are we safe enough? No, I don't know.
Did you get better?
Yeah. And what's interesting is as we're more open and honest, we're realizing there were a lot of things that are going on that we didn't know, but now we know more about it. Not knowing doesn't make us safer.
Right.
Even the legal guys will tell you, not knowing doesn't mean we're not liable. So let's have those more open conversations. We're learning a ton more about our operations. Our guys close to these events and close to this work are helping us build better work.
Did this safety improvement impact production?
I think they're kind of interconnected.
I totally think they're interconnected. In fact, I think the only place they're separate is in the leadership team.
Right. And I mean, I've seen a quality event or issue that through operational learning opened up ergonomic issues and production issues that the learning team solved that cost virtually nothing to fix. That solved 3 ergo problems, a rework problem, and a quality issue. because we were willing to open up these conversations. I mean, really, it was an operational problem, not just a quality or just a safety problem.
What's your favorite learning team story?
Ooh.
You can make one up, I guess. Okay. That would be immoral and unethical, right, but go ahead.
I love the one that I told earlier because it's the very first one. It's kind of like, what's your first car? You know, my first car was a 56 Chevy, always my favorite. But I love that first story. But, there's a ton of them. I love the stories where the employees are a little doubtful that we're going to listen to them, but then we do, and then they solve it. And like, we had a traffic problem on line zero, which is one of our lines there. It's a lean model line, actually, but a ton of traffic issues out there. And we had tried sort of the traditional ways of fixing it through industrial engineering and lean kind of approaches. And we were not very successful at making the traffic better out there. And so when we brought the workers together and let them solve it, it was brilliant. And just a couple of sessions, and we'll talk, when we talk more about learning teams, we can share more about it, but they really came up with a solution set, and it's a bus route that made it much, much better. They owned it, and they solved something that we as leaders had not been able to solve. So that's pretty cool.
So if I have a company and I'm on this journey, I'm really pushing towards this new view, can I call you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I call you, what can you do for me?
So what we tend to do that works well.
And this we is you, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, you do this too, so you're the one that introduced me to all this. But yeah, so what I do is I come in and I do a fundamentals, you know, get the leadership and the change agents, get them grounded in the fundamentals. So let's do some fundamental classes, and then let's do operational learning. So that gives them something to do with what they just learned. And so it's kind of cool because if you're like me, you need to be able to put it in practice. The philosophy and the theory and stuff is super helpful. It helps us think differently, change the way, and kind of challenges some of our paradigms, some of these notions that we have that we've been super focused on certain things that may actually be driving not what we really want.
Right, right.
And so that helps us. And then let's go do operational learning. And my goal with anybody that I work with is to build in the confidence, capacity, advocacy, if you will.
Right.
At the site or within the business so that they can carry this forward. Because you and I both know there's a lot of people that are wanting to do this, but there's a need for people in the businesses to get good at this.
And especially, I think, companies that have done a pretty good job getting the word out. So they've done a pretty good job with fundamentals. The managers have read the books, and they're starting to talk. And the fluency, the language is starting to really be the language of this kind of new view, the different way of forming safety. You really can come in and sort of provide the next step and build on that excitement, rekindle old fires and stoke up continuing fires and get them to that next level.
Yeah, they can get some real traction with this, which is fun. And we can do it around safety or quality or wherever their need is, really. And we've done operational learning around things that weren't safety related at all.
If you could give one piece of advice to a safety manager, a production manager, if you could give one piece of advice, what would it be?
So one piece, can I say two parts to that?
Yeah, you can have two parts.
Really start to focus on asking better questions, not what were you thinking, why did you do that, but, you know, tell me about your work and really include in a meaningful way the worker, the guy that's close to it. Listen to him and understand that he probably came to work, he most likely came to work to get work done.
Holy crap, you're smart. You're like the smartest guy ever. Do you think we covered it? How, what do you think?
Well, I think I'm at least the second smartest person in this room.
Oh, no. Thanks for your time, man. This was fun. So if people can get a hold of you, yep. hopcoach.net.
Yeah, hopcoach, all one word, hopcoach.net. And it's got my contact information there.
Sweet.
And love to hear from you and love to come help you and get things going.
Thanks, Bob.
Yep, my pleasure.
Bye-bye. There you have it. That's Bob Edwards. And what a nice time I had talking to him. Really interesting. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Bob's really attainable. He's someone you should call, especially if you're interested in sort of going to the next level of the new view, kind of an operational level. It's a really, really great thing to do. He's exciting and fun and funny, and your people will love him. Thanks for the day. And as always, thanks for listening. Subscribe, please. Keep doing it. The numbers seem to matter. I'm not sure to whom, but they matter. And as always, I invite you to have fun every day. keep learning. That's really important. And for goodness sakes, be safe.